Welcome to Captivate the Room with your host, internationally known voice expert, Tracy Goodwin, an award-winning speaker who has taught hundreds around the globe to make a big impact with their voice. This podcast is for anyone who wants to step onto a bigger stage, make a bigger impact, and have a voice that makes people listen. Presentation matters, and the voice is the missing link. Join in and you'll see why.
Welcome to the podcast, Captivate the Room, episode number 36. I'm your host, Tracy Goodwin, and I teach people how to step into their voice power so they can speak their truth beautifully while making a big impact. You can find out more about me at CaptivateTheRoom.com. Make sure you go over there and check out my three new courses. I have a podcast voice technique course, international speaker voice course, and a new presentation skills course, and I'd love for you to check them out. Today, I am super excited about the guest that I have with me, and I know you are going to get so much value. I've got Charlie Posnick with me today, and I've really admired Charlie's work, not for that long, really, but I just find so much value in everything he delivers. Just really, really a top-notch, cool guy, and I'm so honored to have him on the show. Let me tell you a little bit about Charlie. Charlie refers to himself as a guy, just a guy with no rags to riches story to share, just a guy who leads a reasonably good life. The problem? He wants to lead an unreasonably spectacular life, and he found it difficult to do that while working for someone else. For the better part of 20 years, Charlie worked in the hedge fund industry, and he wouldn't trade that experience for anything. But the problem was that he was helping build someone else's dream. So he began investigating ways he could build an online business while continuing to work in the hedge fund industry. In a matter of a few years, he transitioned from working for someone else to creating a strong online presence for his various business ventures. He quickly learned what a powerful tool an online business could be in creating a spectacular life. Charlie, thank you so much for being here with me today. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure, Tracy.
It's always so great to see you, and you have such an amazing voice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So tell us about what it is that you do.
Well, my business is the Boomer Business Owner, and I started probably 2.5 years ago. And at that time, my thought was, I'm a baby boomer. Most baby boomers are kind of classified as digital immigrants, meaning they're kind of new to the digital environment. And I thought, well, let me help my fellow baby boomers become online entrepreneurs. I love the online space. I love things digitally. And I just wanted to, that was my kind of mission, to help people do that. So I started a podcast, started interviewing successful online entrepreneurs, and started doing some podcast coaching and online business coaching. And I was doing that for probably the better part of a year and a half or 2 years. And recently, I've been looking at pivoting away from working with individuals to working with small businesses. So instead of helping baby boomers who want to become business owners, helping existing baby boomer business owners grow their business digitally. Because if the individual doesn't know much about the digital space, and I'm going to help them start an online business, I guess it logically follows that a typical baby boomer business owner might not have his or her hands around all the things that can be done digitally to grow their business.
And have you found, that's great. Mm-hmm. And have you found that a lot of these type of brick and mortar type places, they just haven't they just haven't gone that direction. They know they need to, but they just haven't gone that direction.
Yes. And if they have gone the direction, if you and I looked at their website, it would probably be lacking in a lot of ways. You know, not that it may not be horrible, but I have seen some websites that were circa 2003, you know, with the little navigation bar on the left-hand side. Again, not that there's anything wrong with that. It's not about having a pretty website. You want it to be functional first and foremost. But, you know, websites are probably lacking. they're probably doing social media, meaning they're paying someone to do something that they don't really know what they're doing. So my focus is all on kind of trying to measure things. You know, why are you doing social media? What do we want to measure out of that? You know, are you doing email marketing? You know, should you be doing email marketing? How do we measure the monies that you're spending? So that's kind of where I try to put my focus.
So you really help them create a strategy.
Yes, create strategy. That's a really good question. So where most people who would position themselves as consultants would help them create a strategy and then say, hey, Tracy, here's a pretty report. Thanks for your check. Good luck to you. My thought is to say, hey, Tracy, let's sit down. I'm on your team. Think of me as kind of like an outsourced digital chief marketing officer. So you're paying me essentially as a consultant. So we're going to sit down, look at what's going on. We'll put together the plan. And then after you sign off on it, I will take full and complete responsibility for implementing that plan for you. So to make sure that the stuff is getting done, so you don't have to say, oh, Charlie said I should create a lead magnet. What the heck is a lead magnet? Or he told me what it is. Where do I get that done? How do I upload that to my email service provider, et cetera?
I love that so much. And my whole audience is probably smiling from ear to ear now that I have you on the show because they hear me talk ad nauseum about the challenges that I personally face in technology. I'm guessing I'm a boomer. Tell us what classifies a boomer.
I guess technically speaking, it's somebody who's like over 50 years old or 50 to 67 or something like that. I've actually found people who are attracted to what I'm doing, even skewing a little bit younger. So maybe early to mid 40s. So, you know, I kind of, when I started the business, I used boomer as sort of a proxy for digital immigrant, but who I'm really attracting or appealing to are folks who didn't grow up in the digital environment, who don't really have a great grasp on it, who don't really understand, maybe know a little bit about a little bit of things, but to kind of help them grow digitally.
Because it's so important, right? It's everything now.
I believe so. I was talking to someone the other day, and it's interesting. They said something that I didn't even think about. So let's say my prototypical client is a 55 or 60 year old business owner who has a $3 million widget manufacturing business. They're successful, they're making money. And I come in and I say, well, let me help you grow the business. A derivative benefit for that is if I can help them through digital means grow their business when they're ready to exit, which probably may not be too far down the road, it's going to enhance the value of their business as well. So people can relate to that on multiple levels. I can hopefully make some more money now, increase my cash flow, but also increase the terminal value of my business.
Oh, that is so good. Yeah. I would have never thought about that either.
Yeah.
So true. So really by adding all of this social media and all of this technology, people are almost reinventing their businesses. I mean, is that, do you see people that way? Do boomers reinvent themselves around, you know, in this age? Do you see that?
I think it's two separate issues we're talking about. Number one, as far as reinventing the business, I think it's just an additional kind of channel distribution, additional lead generation, additional way to get your products, services, information out and exposed to more people and build the know, like, and trust component. For example, my podcasting mentor, John Dumas. John does a monthly income report during the podcast. And he has a CPA, I think his name is Josh Bowerly. And he has Josh on the show every month to give some tips and things like that. I've never met Josh. He sounds like a nice guy. I don't know what his background is, but I kind of feel like I know him. And I'm thinking if I ever wanted another accountant, I wouldn't hesitate to at least reach out to him. So again, we're just trying to maybe if this boomer business is using digital things to just get people to know, like, and trust them a little more, I think that's going to potentially lead to more business down the road. So the other thing you mentioned was boomers reinventing themselves. So I'm thinking of an office worker who is a baby boomer. Maybe they just got laid off or something like that. Do they need to reinvent themselves? And I think there's a lot of that necessary, probably more necessary than is going on these days. I remember Tracy, I think it was Brian Tracy, said something to the effect of, we should all look at ourselves as the CEO of our own personal services corporation. And that is a mindset. And I think a lot of baby boomers are grown up and they're, you know, looking for the gold watch. Mine's black, but gold watch. And, you know, they're just being taken care of by a company. And I think there needs to be some kind of a shift towards kind of taking personal responsibility for their income and their lives. And it doesn't have to be creating a new startup. It could be going and, you know, driving for Uber or something like that. But just realizing that, you know, you need to take control of what's going on instead of sitting back and hoping someone else is going to take care of you. I think a lot of that stuff needs to go on. I think more and more of that stuff probably is going on.
Yeah. And a big part of that, no doubt, has to be visibility, which is what you do.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Exactly. I think doing a podcast, I just recorded episode probably 410 of my podcast. It's probably one of the best business decisions I have ever made, Tracy, bar none.
I want to talk about the podcast. Let's. I had that on my list to talk about. I want to jump on over to that because I was had the wonderful experience of being on your podcast. I love your podcast. You started out with 7 shows a week. Mm-hmm. And so tell us why you think that was the best business decision you ever made.
I'll use an absurd example. Let's say Sir Richard Branson. I call Sir Richard Branson up and I say, hey, Sir Richard, I'm Charlie. I'm a really good guy. Would you mind giving me like a half an hour of your time? I just want to chat about a couple of things. My gut tells me he would probably respectfully decline. Yet when I call and say, I have a platform, albeit a small platform, people are much more receptive. There's a bigger chance that he is going to say yes because maybe he has a book that he wants to promote. Maybe he has a new venture that he wants to promote, something along those lines. So ratchet that down into something more reasonable, an author, somebody's coming out with a new book, somebody who focuses on email marketing, wants to kind of talk about their service. I'm offering a platform for them to do that. So they're much, much more willing to give me or to invest 25, 30, 35, 40 minutes of their time because they potentially see some kind of a return from that. So what I get from that is great content that I could hopefully monetize in some way, shape, or form. But equally, if not more importantly, Tracy, I get a relationship with that person. Mm-hmm. I may not go out and have beverages with everybody who I interview. You know, it's like anything. 20% of the people you may never talk to again for the rest of your life. But there's some people who I've made really, really good, close friendships with. I've started mastermind groups with people. I've engaged some of my guests for their service to help me build my business. It's just, the benefits are just incredible.
So that's amazing. So you believe that podcasting is pretty powerful platform.
I do. And even if somebody, a baby boomer, whomever, wants to just, it's just a creative outlet, if nothing else. If you don't look at it for monetizing or meeting people, I mean, just if you like the Philadelphia Eagles football team, start a podcast. Even if nobody's listening to it, it's a good creative outlet for someone.
So what kind of businesses and entrepreneurs might want a podcast? Do you think anything goes?
I think so. You know, if I had to niche myself into coaching a particular type of person to do a podcast, it might be CEOs, and those CEOs can be solopreneurs who want to kind of get their word out, or even marketing people at large organizations. Again, the smaller the company, the CEO and the marketing person may well be one and the same. But marketing people, I mean, I'm thinking ahead just from a business perspective, using it as kind of lead generation. Mm. Let's say you're selling widgets. Can you not have a podcast that would interview prospective widget buyers? So again, back to my earlier comment, it gives you an opportunity on a different level and on a deeper level to establish some rapport or relationship with this person that you might not otherwise have had if you were just Charlie calling and trying to sell some widgets.
Yeah.
Just kind of start thinking along those lines. Again, back to kind of taking responsibility, looking at yourself as the CEO of your own personal services corporation.
Well, and I love what you said about just do it as a creative outlet. Mm-hmm. That I love, yeah. You know, for me, I, as a voice expert for years, I had this thing inside me that kept this horrible voice that kept saying, why don't you have a podcast? You're a voice person. And my resistance was the technical, was what you do, the technical. Did you have any hesitations about it? Or did you just decide, I'm going to do a podcast, here we go? Or is it something that you had concerns about? And then I want to talk about the challenges after the fact. But the prequel, was there any concern over or hesitations about doing it?
There's always some concern or hesitation about doing something you don't know. How do I do this? How do I do the audio? I was fortunate to hook up, again, as I mentioned earlier, with John Dumas. I was a one-on-one mentee of his. I was in his mastermind group. And I was also one of the early members of Podcasters Paradise, his podcasting group. And I could say, Tracy, that when I was first starting the podcast and getting it set up, I would literally have two screens open on my computer, one with a video on his Podcaster's Paradise site on how to upload my episode to Libsyn. And the other screen, I was actually uploading my episode to Libsyn.
Wow.
So when you don't know something, the learning curve is kind of steep. But if you have some assistance in doing that, whether it's a personal one-on-one coach, whether it's a community like Podcaster's Paradise, whether it's a YouTube video for free, somebody showing you how to do that, as long as you're willing to invest, I think, the time and the energy, the effort to do that, you can teach it to yourself. And it's like riding a bike. It's so difficult when you first start. Mm-hmm. But after the fact, it's just like, okay, great. I got to plug my microphone in. I got to, take the WAV file, change it to an MP3 file, send it to my audio guy, blah, 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 blah. It's just, like riding a bike.
Yeah, yeah. And now you've got how many episodes out? It's something incredible.
I've recorded about 410. I've released probably 400 so far. So yeah, I'm about a 2 week. I have about a 2 month padding in there.
That's amazing. And you gave me incredible advice before I started mine. You said we were interviewing for your show, I think, and you said do something very important. And I said, what is it? I said, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. You said, buffer up, buffer up. And I tell you what, if I had not known that, I would have been scrambling. Mm-hmm. I would have been scrambling. So that was such incredible advice. And I guess as you go along, I know I've certainly gone, and you're way ahead of me on the episodes, but are there things you've learned and you've changed and adjusted the way you're doing things now with the podcast?
From a technical back of the house standpoint, probably not much. From a front of the house interview standpoint, yes, I'm always tweaking my interview flow, trying to sometimes more go with the flow than have a more structured, templated interview. John Dumas kind of busts on himself and he says, geez, you should listen to my first 50 episodes. They're pretty interesting. And if you do, it's funny, if you do listen to John's first 50 episodes, and quite frankly, Tracy, if you listen to my first 50 episodes, they're much more, monotone. And hi, Tracy. So tell me about, and maybe there's a little inflection there. Tell me about how you started your business. And so now I stand up, I put my microphone on a mic stand. So I'm standing up, I'm breathing, I'm able to project, and I'm actually really enthused and excited about talking with the person I'm interviewing. And I think that comes across. So yeah, if you listen to the one I released last week versus one of my first 50, you'll probably notice a difference. And that's just part of the evolutionary process of getting in the game and doing it.
Yeah. So, I'm a voice person. I have to ask this. Did you have any voice and presentation challenges from the start? I mean, you said you definitely tweaked that along the way, but were there any inhibitions about that? Because I hear that from people a lot. I want to do a podcast, but I hate my voice, or I want to do a podcast, but I have this terrible fear of public speaking. Did you experience any of those challenges?
Sometimes, much to my chagrin, I don't really have those challenges. No, I just get out and do it. And if my voice is horrible or you don't like it or somebody else doesn't like it, so be it. If I want to work on it, make that better, that's on me. But, I don't really have those. I personally don't have those things, but I'm sure that a lot of people would. And the recommendation I would give is just do it. again, maybe nobody's going to be listening to your podcast. Listen to yourself. And if for some reason there's just this self-confidence or self-image thing, then maybe you don't want to do it. But I don't really maybe care as much as some other people. I mean, I want to put out a good product, but if you don't like my voice, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to change my voice.
Yeah. And see, I love that. Listen up, people, because you hear me say the same thing. And what I say is that the people that like you are going to gravitate to you. Mm-hmm. It's same with me. Not everybody likes me, you know, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Not everybody likes my voice. That's okay. So what kind of social media do you use for your podcast? And what, you know, what channels do you use for your business? And are they the same?
Yeah, I guess I focus mainly on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. You know, try to be respectful in each of those channels. Try to put some of my content out, put some curated content out. You talk about technology and not knowing what to do. I have, you know, a firm that does that for me. And yeah. We talked about, you know, they know what I do and they're familiar with my content. And again, they look for good curated content to kind of mix in with things. So, you know, I don't go overboard with social media, but I think just, you know, some good basic stuff, getting it out, letting people know that I'm there. That's kind of how I focus my energies in social media.
You know, I think that trips a lot of people up. I know I struggled with that initially, the ideology of outsourcing. Mm-hmm. You know, feeling the need to, I have to do it all myself. And you outsource all of that. You're putting the podcast together and the social media for your business. You outsource all of that.
Yeah. I always joke, you know, Chris Ducker, he's, you know, the virtual mm-hmm. assistant guy. I always joked if I ever met Chris Ducker, he would say, "Hey, Charlie, you should think about doing some things yourself." Because I outsource so many things. I think that I always get these confused, but in my mind, you should outsource things that you don't know how to do and don't want to know how to do. For example, for me, it was audio editing. Mm. You should outsource things that you do know how to do but don't want to do, which is for me is show notes. And lastly, you should outsource things that you do know how to do that you want to do, but probably shouldn't be doing because it's probably not a good use of your time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a big proponent of outsourcing. And for what it costs, you know, people think, my gosh, to get an episode of a podcast edited, it might cost me a couple $100s. And to get transcription done, it might cost this. And to get somebody else to post it to my website costs that. You would be, if you haven't outsourced before, your mind will be blown when you see the quality of help, assistance that's out there from a virtual standpoint. And not only the quality, but the cost to engage those services.
Yeah, I love that. And I think there are so many parts of that that I know I certainly experienced. You know, I think we all think about the money, but then if we just put it in the perspective of, okay, you're paying that, but what are you losing mm-hmm. not stepping into your gift? Mm-hmm. And that's what slapped me so hard in the face. I'm on, you know, Buffer mm-hmm. typing and hating when it's not my gift.
Yeah.
It's not my gift. And so I think that's, you know, you just always have so much valuable advice. And I think that's it. You really have to look at the time and the money and focus on the strength. And I wonder sometimes if with the clients that you have, do they deal with the same stuff? And that's maybe why their website does look like 1993. Or maybe they don't even know to outsource.
I think you've hit the nail on the head right there. I think that the whole concept of outsourcing, I talked to colleagues of mine, you know, former business colleagues of mine, and I talked to them about outsourcing and I have somebody do this and do that, a virtual assistant. They look at me like I have six heads. Like, well, what is that? Oh, you mean you can find somebody to put together a list of all the beauty salons in the Northeast region of the United States? And that person could do that for $75. I mean, like they just don't really get it. They don't understand it. There's no frame of reference for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And so they just don't do it.
Yes. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many platforms out there now. I know I've heard of Odesk, mm-hmm. I believe is one. And I've used Fiverr before. Mm-hmm. Found some good people off of Fiverr. I believe you use Elance.
Yeah, Elance, I think, and Odesk have merged to form Upwork.
Oh, okay.
As of today. So that's the one I currently use. I mean, I've been using Elance. I had been using Elance for 7 or 8 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, it's really funny. It's the same process you go through. Like you post a job and there's going to be 10 people apply for the job. Two of the people are there to waste your time. Two of the people are probably really good. And the others are kind of somewhere in the middle. And it's just a process of kind of sifting through that to find out the person you want that's, you know, provides kind of what you need, whether it's the technical expertise or the responsiveness or just the personal interaction, things like that.
So communication is key in that as well. You got to know what you want and you got to know how to communicate it.
Absolutely. The more clear you are with your communication to an outsourcer, whatever they're doing for you, the more success you're going to find.
And do you find that same thing true with your clients? Sometimes that communication is key, but they don't quite know how to communicate their message across, you know, social media or their website or, you know, their brick and mortar looks great, but they don't really know how to communicate that in other platforms.
Yeah, I think there's some not knowing how to communicate. And I think this is a massive generalization. Sometimes we just get lazy, Tracy, with communication. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, you know, Tracy, I've interviewed Tracy, so she kind of knows what I do. So, you know, if she wants to send somebody my way, fine. You know, it's just about communicating. Tracy, this is what's been going on with me. This is what's changed since the last time we spoke. You know, again, I think it is important to communicate what you're doing on a continual basis, not an obnoxious basis, but just a continual basis. Just drip it out there so people know what it is you're doing.
Yeah, and that's so much better time spent than typing in the buffers. Goes back to that. So let me ask you something, and this is a little off topic, but you specialize in boomers and I specialize in voice and communication, and something that I get a lot, and I'm curious if you get and what your thoughts are, how does the boomer communicate to the millennial? You know, you've got a boomer store, shop owner, great product. Do we have to change our thinking? Is there a gap that needs to be bridged? Can you talk about that a little bit?
How does the boomer communicate with a millennial? Very carefully. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought. So yeah, you have a boomer business owner. Let's say they're 55, 60 years old, and they either proactively reach out to a digital agency because they think they want to grow their business digitally, or maybe a digital agency reaches out to them. I think oftentimes there's just a fundamental communication problem in that they're kind of talking different languages. Mm. You have somebody who is younger, again, who is, this is a massive generalization, they're younger, they know the stuff inside and out, so they don't realize that you don't know what an autoresponder is, or you don't know what a lead magnet is, or, you know, any of these kind of things. So I think oftentimes there is a communication problem, which is where I see that void and I want to step in that void because I can understand what the millennial is saying and I can communicate that to the boomer. If left to their own avail, I think that's where you have problems because, I mean, a classic situation, you could have a business owner, a boomer business owner saying something like, I don't know, I'd like it for when somebody comes to my website and they click on this button for it to play happy birthday to them. You know, assuming that we know when their birthday is, whatever. So the person may very well say, okay, all right, yeah, I can do that. And next thing you know, they're charging them $10,000 to program this thing in the website, which the person just thought, okay, great, this is kind of what I think I need or what I want. And there's just that lack mm-hmm. of communication. Mm-hmm. And whereas if somebody was in the middle, say for me, for example, I would say, well, what do you really need that for? Do you understand that's going to cost you $10,000? Do you think is going to be the return on your investment for that $10,000? So just kind of having that conversation, I think there is a fundamental problem, generally speaking, with someone who is more of a digital immigrant and someone who is more of a digital native.
What an amazing skill you have at that. That's really a gift. It really is.
Well, thanks.
You know, I get that all the time. Companies will call and say, well, we've got the older people that are about to kill the younger people and vice versa. What do we do? You know, so that's amazing. That's really wonderful because there is a divide. I mean, I miss my 8-track. My son doesn't know what an 8-track is. You know, is that like something you run cars on? What is that, Mom? I'll never forget when I brought an IBM Selectric up and set it on the table. It was as if I set a spaceship on the table, you know?
I have over to my right, Tony Robbins, his Personal Power series. Yeah. I have the audio tape series right here. Not the CDs, but the audio tape series right over here, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about video? What do you think about, you know, we've got all this video, we've got this live stream. Of course, YouTube's been around for a while. Is it valuable and is it the new way, and is it necessary for your people to be seen like that?
Is it good stuff? Sure. I think it comes down to the fundamental conversation between some people have this concept of be everywhere. Okay, you should be available on any different platform. And other people say, well, you should probably focus on one platform. Not that you can't do things on other platforms, but focus. So if you're a writer, write blog posts. If you're an audio guy like me, I would much rather talk and have a conversation with you than exchange emails.
Yeah.
Write a blog post. Do audio. If you're photogenic, you want to be an entertainer, you just want to see yourself and do video, great. I don't think there's a need for someone to say, oh my gosh, this new platform Blab, this is really good. I should be doing this. You know, do you want to be doing this? What's the business case for you to be doing it? And even if there isn't a business case for you to be doing it, do you want to be doing it? And if so, go do it. You know, so I'm not a real big proponent of you have to be everywhere. You have to take advantage of everything. Is video and the new live streaming stuff great? Sure. If you want to take advantage of it, great. If you don't, that's fine as well.
Yeah. I think that I have fallen prey to that shiny object syndrome, you know, that feeling that, and not that it goes back to that, you know, where I need a Charlie, not knowing. So I think I have to be like Visa, you know, everywhere, you know, I got to do this and I got to do that. And that will literally suck the life out of you.
Yes, it can do that. And I very much lean towards, again, the spectrum of pick something to be your primary channel. Do that, and then you can dabble in the other things if you want.
And that just takes time, right? Just takes time to build it up.
Yes. And one could argue if you're dabbling in everything, it's going to take time to build it up as well. So if you're investing the time on one platform or investing the time on multiple platforms, at the end of the time you're investing, where will you see the biggest benefit?
Yeah.
And I assert that it is with focusing on one platform.
Yeah. Yeah. The one that where your people most likely are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And where your strength lies for sure.
Yeah. And I also, I mean, I transcribe my podcast. So it's kind of what I want to do, but also how does my audience want to take in my information? Some baby boomers might not have a smartphone. They might not know what podcasts are, but they're cool going to a website and reading it. So I want to make that information available to them. It doesn't make me a blogger. I'm just taking my information, repurposing it so they can take it in however they want.
That's great. I didn't realize you did that. I knew you did the articles. I've read a number of the articles, and that's so great. That's the way you've got to do it to keep up.
Yep.
I want to jump back to podcasting for just a minute because something just popped into my mind when you said that about the audio cassettes. Is podcast the new radio like we knew?
I'm not an expert on podcasting. I don't try to position myself as an expert on podcasting, where it's been, where it's going. But when you hear things about car manufacturers putting, you know, the iTunes app on your car so that when you have your dial, instead of dialing to a radio station, you could dial to a podcast, I think there's a lot to be said for things moving in that direction. More kind of on-demand listening versus however radio is classified. You know, people are just pushing content out, whatever they want to push out within some kind of a genre, if you will, and then, you know, throwing advertisements in there. I mean, if you're a podcast listener, as I am, like when I'm in the car, I listen to podcasts all the time, when you turn the radio on, from when I turn the radio on, I'm thinking, oh my gosh. I mean, in the last hour, I've heard two songs out of six that I'd like. And the rest of the time was just stuff that I don't really want to hear. It's like you realize how bombarded you are with this stuff. It's like if you stop eating sugar for a couple months and then you have a candy bar, you're thinking, oh my gosh, this tastes awful.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably going to see a trend towards more on-demand programming like podcasting.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking about, these cars with this podcast button on them. That's absolutely incredible. And it's so true. I turned the radio on the other day and I started having an anxiety attack. I had to turn it off.
And just to take it a step further, I think where I don't need something in my car to help me listen to podcast, but maybe a traditional baby boomer who is not as sophisticated when it comes to podcast apps and podcast players and things like that, it's going to open up podcasting to a whole new audience. Somebody saying, oh, what's this? Let me, you know, push this button.
Yeah. You know, I put books on tape for a man one time for several years, and he had his own books that he put on tape. He was a boomer because he always wanted to be learning. Mm-hmm. And so he was always, you know, he'd get out of the shower and put the phone, you know, I mean, just all the time learning. So it's, and that's so cool. You know, we don't want to hear those advertisements anymore. We want to hear you and me and all of these other people. Do you have some favorite podcasts that you listen to?
I listen to Entrepreneur on Fire, John Dumas's podcast. I listen to Pat Flynn's podcast, Smart Passive Income. That was actually the first podcast I ever listened to.
Yeah.
Probably, I don't know, less than a year before I started my podcast, I probably couldn't spell podcast. Didn't know what it was. And somehow, I can't tell you how, I stumbled across Pat Flynn's podcast, started listening to that, found out about John Dumas, you know, hooked up with John. So I try listening to a number of different podcasts. If you said, hey, Charlie, my friend Bob has the podcast, you might like it, I'll subscribe to it, I'll download, I'll listen. And if it's, I feel like it's adding value, then I'll, you know, continue to listen. But more often than not, I don't know, maybe there's just audio quality or the person is really kind of unprofessional. Like I listened to this one podcast and for the first, it seemed like 10 minutes, the host and the co-host were just bantering back and forth. Mm-hmm. If I want that, I'll go listen to Howard Stern and Robin, you know, bantering back and forth. I want some information when I'm listening to the podcast. And I understand there's maybe a little bit of that going on, but it went past my sense of comfort. So I know this person has great information and I'm willing to ingest it in another way, but I just, you know, can't do that from a podcast standpoint.
Yeah, I hear you on that. That is so great that you got to work with John Lee Dumas like that. What an inspiration. What a story.
Yep. If it wasn't for John, I would not have a successful podcast today. I will say that.
Yeah, I just read about his story the other day, and what an amazing story. What a wonderful life, you know, that he's really crafted and created. And I know he works hard, but such a beautiful story, his life.
Yes. And for anybody who's watching this, who's thinking about doing a podcast, I can't recommend enough Podcasters Paradise, his community. There's probably over 200 videos there. So again, there's a cost involved more so than a free video on YouTube, obviously. But if you're thinking about, you know, do it yourself, do it for free on YouTube, done for you or some personal one-on-one coach, this is kind of a middle ground. It'll allow you to expose yourself to podcasting, find out about the technical aspects, meet other people. So I would highly recommend people looking at that.
Yeah. Well, he definitely leads a spectacular life, which is something that you talk about on your website, that the possibility of leading a spectacular life. Is that possible?
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, if not, why do we get up in the morning? You know, my whole thing is I think a lot of us get into the rut of doing things for the money and doing things we might not enjoy. And I guess my premise is you can do something you enjoy and support yourself financially doing that. That is, you know, where I strive for and support yourself in a manner to which you want, not just basically pay your bills, but actually, you know, do what you want to do. So I think that is possible. It takes some work, takes some commitment, takes an investment of some sort, both time and money. But I think it is possible, yeah. And I wish more people would strive for that.
I think we see more, I don't know, you just see what you think, but I feel like that's the world we live in now. You know, back when I was growing up, you got a job and you worked at that job for the rest of your life, and there wasn't layoffs and there wasn't this and there was, that was just the way it was. Mm-hmm. That's not the world we live in anymore, I don't think.
No, and I think that's where the culture shock's coming in for a lot of baby boomers, because they bought into that as they were growing up. And now they're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm 60 and I've just been downsized.
Yeah.
What do I do? And good luck trying to find another company to hire you for the next 10 or 20 years, even though you probably bring as much, if not more, to the table than a lot of other people they might be hiring, which is what comes back to what I said earlier. I think there needs to be some more efforts in taking some personal responsibility, figuring out that I'm the one that's responsible for getting myself to where I want to be, whether it's a spectacular life, whether it's paying my bills, or somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think that's so right. I know that that has certainly was part of my story. You know, I had have a special needs child, and that's what partly drove me to entrepreneurship. But you don't get at 50 even. I don't know that there's anybody really interested in bringing me on. I thought about leaving and going to, I have such a following in Australia. I thought, I think I'll go over to Australia. They won't even let you in over 50. I'm like, the AARP card, that was one thing, but not being allowed to move to another country. So it's cool. It is cool because I do think boomers, I mean, we've got so much experience. We've got so much knowledge, mm-hmm. I just think that there is absolutely nothing, if we put our mind to it and do the work, that we can't do.
Yeah. And I think, Tracy, there's just a piece that's missing. Like, someone hasn't taught us, or baby boomers, how to take that knowledge that we have and monetize that. Because right now, as we're sitting here talking, there's somebody who's sitting in a cubicle who knows Microsoft Excel 100 times better than you and I and anybody else to put together knows about it. And they're just thinking, okay, well, I know Microsoft Excel, big deal. But it is a big deal, because you could probably be making twice on an hourly basis what you're making now in some other way, doing freelancing for someone, setting up a course, teaching people about what you know about Microsoft Excel and selling that. There's a lack of somebody having put those two things together and actually saying to a baby boomerish age person, let's do an inventory of your skills and abilities. And we just take things for granted. Oh yeah, well, I can do this. Yeah, I do this. And I might do it better than 98% of the people in the world, which puts me in kind of expert category status, which means I can teach that to a lot of other people who don't know half what I know.
There it is. There it is, right there. I love that so much. And I've even struggled with that. There have been moments where I didn't even think to mention, oh yeah, I studied under so-and-so. You studied under so-and-so? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked with him for about 5 years back in 89. Mm-hmm. He was a genius. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so. You know, and not that I take it for granted, but it's that disconnect. Mm-hmm. Even in this little stuff, like, and not little, I don't mean to minimize what you do, but like repurposing content and things like that. You can, you know, what? Okay, stop, time out. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that even mean? You know, like, you can build an e-course. Mm-hmm. What's an e-course? You know, there's just so much potential. But we need people like you bridging that gap, building that bridge, speaking that language that we just don't even, I mean, there's a whole world out there.
Something I think would be very valuable, Tracy, to the folks who are listening, and this really moved me when I understood it. I always thought an expert was the person who knew everything there was to know humanly possible on the face of the planet about a particular subject. So on a scale of 1 to 10, this person is the mythical 10. And if you're not a 10, who are you to be teaching things to other people? When I realized that the concept of expert is a relative concept, it radically shifted my universe. So, for example, let's say with my knowledge in online business and stuff, let's say I'm a six. There are surely lots of people who know more than me about this. So I'm a six on the scale of 1 to 10. I am looking up to the sevens, eights, nines. I don't know if there's any tens, but I'm looking up to those people and I'm learning from those people. I'm taking their courses. I'm reading their blogs. I'm listening to their podcasts. I'm taking in information. However, there's people who are ones and twos and threes and fours and fives who I can help,
right?
Because they don't know as much as me. So when I learn that and learn that I do have value, even though I don't know everything there is to know, again, radically changed my world.
Yeah. That's so powerful. That is so powerful and so true. And I feel like on another part of that is the other sixes don't even know what you know, because we all experience something different. Mm-hmm. Now, there's other voice people, but do they know what I know? Do they know what I teach? And I think there's merit to that as well.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. Because some people, we all gravitate to different styles and different personalities and connect in different ways with different people. So I think that minimizing, I can't do that. There's people better than me or know more than me. I think that can be troublesome.
True. And that's the way we've been brought up. It just, you know, kind of is what it is. Nobody explained the concept of expert to me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, it took me till I was 50. How old am I? 56. I was 55 years old to figure that out.
Well, I woke up one day and I thought, God, I'm not an expert. People have been doing this for 30 years. And then I was like, oh, I've been doing this for 30 years. Okay. Maybe I need to reevaluate this a little bit. But that's so great. Well, is any last minute tips that you can think of, anything last minute you want to share with the audience and encourage them about doing a podcast or social media or, you know, something that you would like to share with the brick and mortar boomers, you know, or all of the above? Any last thoughts that you want to leave with us? This has been so great.
I am a kind of ready, fire, aim guy. So again, for better or worse, I'm a proponent of getting in the game and start doing something, because we could sit here, you and I, Tracy, and intellectualize about starting a blog or creating a course on XYZ. But until we get in and actually do things, we're not going to really know what the market wants and, you know, what kind of things we like to do and things like that. So a lot of us fall into the trap, I should say, of planning and planning and planning, and it might be right, and I need to read another book, I need to educate myself more, I need to become more of an expert. I am a proponent of just getting in there and doing it. Do it in a responsible way. You don't need to go spend $20,000 to, you know, necessarily do something. But to set up a little website, start posting some information, seeing what kind of people you attract, seeing what kind of things they want. You just never know where things might take you. So my advice is just get started, do something. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money, just more of your time than money. See if you like it, try it on. You may not like anything having to do with online business, but just, you know, get started and do something.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's wonderful. Well, Charlie, where's the best place for people to find you?
As I think I heard John Dumas say, all the magic happens at theboomerbusinessowner.com. So my contact information is there, phone number's there, email address, social media contacts, things like that. So I would encourage people to reach out there. Or my email address is charlie@theboomerbusinessowner.com, charlie.
Well, I encourage all of you to look Charlie up, look his work up. I'm a fan. I've been a fan since, the day that I found out who he was. I just think you are so awesome and so bring so much wonderful, wonderful information to the table. So thank you so much for giving me some of your time today. It's really been a pleasure to have you with us.
My pleasure, Tracy.
And thank you for your downloads, your shares, and just for being here with a willingness to speak your truth. Just remember, do it beautifully, and I'll see you next time.